Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2. Okay. And let's try this one. Where is this? You can record. There we go.
Recording in progress.
Okay. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Poetry Show, broadcast live here on Enlightened Radio on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. And, of course, we're broadcasting kind of through Janet and I both live officially in Harpers Ferry. Actually, I think I live in Bolivar and she lives in Harpers Ferry. But we share a zip code as well as a longtime friendship. And we have been restarting our poetry show, which we launched many years ago now on WSHC, but have continued it in a couple of different incarnations since then and are trying this out. So you can always get to our player at player.enlightenedradio.org, and we usually podcast these shows, and as soon as when I get them up, I put them on podcasts.enlightenradio.org, and I also post them on Facebook. If I can remember that, I think it's called Enlightened Radio. Also, there. Anyway, good morning, and I want to ask Janet to introduce the poems that she sort of selected for today, and maybe some of her thinking on how she did that, and if there is any thematic unity in our show today. Thank you, Janet.
Well, there is some thematic unity. I originally started searching for fall solstice forms, and that led me to thinking about the concept of light and dark and the interplay and how day and night and how the nights are now getting longer than the days. And as I was doing this, I came across the very famous Jane Kenyon poem, which I'm going to ask John to read because it's one of his favorites, and I know he'll read it well. Let Evening Come. And I originally, when I saw this poem first many, many years ago, I thought it might have been written about her leukemia diagnosis. But I realized that it was written before she was diagnosed with leukemia. I think it was also written before her husband, Donald Hall, had his liver cancer diagnosis. So I think this poem just arose from her at the time and had nothing to do with the health challenges that the couple faced down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very beautiful poem. It's called Let Evening Come.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Jane Kenyon, of course, did die from the leukemia eventually. She worked with her husband, Donald Hall, on putting out her last poems up to the very end of her death, as I understand it.
Well, she's a magnificent poet, and almost everything she writes is turns to gold. It's like an alchemist a little bit. I love her poetry. We read this poem at my wife's mother's passing, and with the daughters in attendance. I think we spread her ashes up at Lake Apacon in New Jersey, where she had spent many happy times. But this may not be about that subject, even though it certainly seemed appropriate for that kind of remembrance. Anyway, so this is called Let Evening Come. Let the light of late afternoon shine through chinks in the barn, moving up the bales as the sun moves down. Let the cricket take up chafing as a woman takes up her needles and her yarn. Let evening come. Let dew collect on the hoe, abandoned in long grass. Let the stars appear and the moon disclose her silver horn. Let the fox go back to its sandy den and let the wind die down. Let the shed go black inside. Let evening come. To the bottle in the ditch, to the scoop in the oats, to the air in the lung, let evening come. Let it come as it will, and don't be afraid. God does not leave us comfortless, so let evening come. I just love that poem.
Yeah, it's got almost an incantatory feel with the repetition of let evening come throughout the poem. You know, you right. kind of feel like you're at the edge of twilight. I always feel like I'm at the edge of twilight. You know, it's getting dusk in the gloaming when I read this poem, and the dark is gathering around. And that tremendous close, you know, don't be afraid. God does not leave us comfortless, so let evening come.
I know, it's almost like a prayer.
Yes.
Or a hymn. I thought the rhyme scheme was kind of interesting, where it's, well, there is some rhyme. Am I wrong? Maybe I'm confusing this with the other poem. No, there's no rhyme scheme. Okay, never mind. I'm thinking of the other poem. Anyway, okay.
But what makes this poem is the terrific number, the close observation and the details that she chooses. She chooses everything right. from the, you know, universal stars appear and the moon disclose her silver horn to tiny things like the bottle of the ditch, the scoop right. in the oat.
Right. And the air in the lung, though. I mean, yes. when you add that to it, you know, she has a lot of dimension in each of these little triplets. I mean, the verses are three lines a piece. I like that poem. It compels the poet to be not windy, but get to the points a little bit. You know, I think that's it's an interesting, sometimes the structure, if you choose one or you find one that's suits your mood, you know, it can be a big help in yes. letting you go someplace that you might not spontaneously have chosen to go.
I really admire in this poem is "Let the cricket take up chafing as a woman takes up her needles and her yarn." That's such an original juxtaposition there, the right. cricket and the woman knitting or crocheting.
Yeah. Right. Cricket. Well, but, you know, you... sitting on the porch and you hear the crickets in the summertime. Certainly in New England. Wasn't she living most of the time in New England, or am I wrong?
Yeah, she lived with Donald Hall. They had a farm in
New Hampshire.
Gosh, I'm trying to remember which New England state, but I can't.
I think it was either I think it was upstate New Hampshire. Because I think we drove somewhere near it at one point in our travels up there. I don't remember exactly where, but it was and her, you know, I wonder sometimes that her poems seem so perfect. I mean, this is not the only one it's taken a while, but I expect that her reputation as history moves on, it's going to grow, because she's really it's something about it stands out, even among other very great poets. So,
yes, she was also bipolar, so I identify with her in that way too. She had difficulties with that during her lifetime. And she wrote these fabulous poems at the same time. She experienced a lot of prejudice early in her career because she was married to Donald Hall, who was already an established poet. And it was sort of like, oh, the wife, you write poetry too. How cute.
How cute. And they
were, oh, jeez.
Seriously.
Oh, God.
So it took her a while. She had to fight for her place in the canyon. Canon.
Yes. But, well, I think that her poems speak for her, you know. Well, and actually, I've read some Donald Hall poems, which were not bad. I mean, they're something interesting, but they didn't shine like hers. I don't know. It's an inappropriate word, but nonetheless. But you were going to do the Robert Frost poem next?
Yes,
the
Robert Frost poem comes next, and I'm just pulling it up now. I didn't print these out. I have them on my iPad.
Well, I have them. Yeah, I got them. You had them linked.
Okay. The Robert Frost poem is one of his more famous poems. It's called Acquainted with the Night. And again, this theme is of light and dark and of the nights becoming longer than the days. And so the first was Let Evening Come. And now we're getting, you know, evening's already passed and we're acquainted with the night is the poem.
This one has triplets too.
Pardon?
This one has triplets too, and does have a rhyme scheme. Yes, yeah, definitely, and a definite meter too as well.
Yes. It starts out with this famous line: "I have been acquainted with the night. I have walked out in rain and back in rain. I've outwalked the furthest city light. I've looked down on the saddest city lane. I have passed the watchman on his beat and dropped my eyes, unwilling to explain. I've stood still and stopped the sound of feet when far away an interrupted cry came over the houses from another street, but not to call me back or say goodbye. And further still, at an unearthly height, one luminary clock against the sky proclaimed the time was neither wrong nor right. I have been one acquainted with the night." And the triplets, it's a 14-line poem, so you would think it might be a song, but it's actually written in what's called terza rima. I think it's how it's pronounced.
Terza rima. So you have
the rhyme scheme is A, B, A, B, C, B, C, D, C. So the middle rhyme, the middle line of the tercet of the triplet ends in becomes the rhyme of the next, the main rhyme.
Yeah, I see. Yes, that's right.
So it's braided together. And it gives it a very, very tight feel.
Right. Yeah, it does. It's threaded together.
And then it ends with a couplet. Proclaim the time was neither wrong nor right. I have been one acquainted with the night.
Now that's like a sonnet. That's kind of like a sonnet. That.
Yeah, it ends with a punch like that, like a sonnet does.
Right.
Preceding triplets were in terza rima.
I probably heard that before, but that's a
I think it's what the Inferno was written in.
Okay. Well, there you go. That would be Frost's idea of a little joke, I think. She probably was. He was a pretty learned poet, you know, as well as a practicing one. He probably was fully aware of that, and that would be, he once commented that he had what's his famous poem, walking by the two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the less traveled one, and it made all the difference. But he originally confessed that he had written that as a joke to send to his friend in England, who was a person who was a little like the reputation of William Wordsworth and would walk through the woods with his eyes closed and then proclaim the beauties that he had witnessed. So he was writing back what he thought was, a a witty reply to his friend. And but later, his friend thought it was a great poem and told him he should. So he got pretty famous. Anyway, I like this one. I have been acquainted with it. I think it's and I love the sense that the time was neither wrong nor right.
Yes.
That's
a very powerful close.
It really is. And the way he raises the clock image there, but not to call me back or say goodbye. And then, further still, at an unearthly height, one luminary clock against the sky, right? So that was very nice, very nice.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, when far away an interrupted cry came from over the houses from another street, but not to call me back or say goodbye, that's kind of poignant. You know, this cry in the night, but it has nothing to do with you. You can wonder what it's about, but it's not for you.
Right. There's all kinds of things you can't see.
Yes.
Yes. I think comes up in the
interview. He's particularly disturbed by the night in this poem. He just, it's not like he has a sense of loneliness. It's like it's chosen. He's chosen this walk.
Right.
I've walked in the rain and back in the rain. I've outwalked the furthest city light.
Well, he's acquainted, but he doesn't quite view it as his friend.
No.
Because there's an indifference, you know, of these things that are happening, you know, interrupted cries, the sound of feet, the saddest city lane, the rain, you know, but he's comfortable. He's not uncomfortable with it.
No.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there always seems to me, always is the wrong word, but frequently in Robert Frost, there's an austerity and a distance in the natural imagery that he likes to use. It's not, its beauty does not entirely seduce him. That it doesn't, it might not actually care about him at all. I don't know. But I sometimes get that feeling in his, and it's an attraction. You know, I mean, it's a nice thing about his poetry that kind of stand back. He's
stand back, but it's also close observation.
Right.
You know, he looks at things very closely. He might not get emotionally caught up in them, but he looks at them very closely.
But he gets rhythm, and he gets rhythm. He gets, you get moving in it, and you see bright lights, you know, like in this one. Very interesting. Yeah, I like Robert Frost. I remember watching him and attempt to deliver his poem that he had composed for President Kennedy at the inauguration, and he couldn't read it because of the wind, or his glasses weren't right, or something. And he was pretty elderly at the time, and so he read another one from memory. The one you read was actually one from memory that he had written years before, but a different president. Anyway, so, but nonetheless. All right. What can we, I know we have.
We're going to close with this, the Rilke poem, which I.
No, well, that, you know, it's always good to close with Rilke because it's very difficult to compete with him. Just very difficult.
I believe this translation is not marked, but I believe I recognize it as Robert Bly's translation of this poem. It's called You Darkness. And again, this is our theme of night and dark. And so this is You Darkness. You Darkness that I come from, I love you more than all the fires that fence in the world. For a fire makes a circle of light for everyone, and then no one outside learns of you. But the darkness pulls in everything, shapes and fires, animals and myself. How easily it gathers them, powers and people. And it is possible that a great presence is moving near me. I have faith in nights.
I love that one. That's, you know, I often wonder with Robert Bly's translations. I think I remember reading that some folks didn't think that, thought that they were fairly liberal. So sometimes I since I don't read German, I can't tell for myself. But
the line that gets translated differently is that it is possible a great presence is moving near me. That gets translated different ways, that line. The rest of it, most of the translations agree pretty closely. Okay. I can pull up to the translation if you're curious.
Well, I'll look it up. I'll look it up. It's okay. You know, we don't have to do it now. But yeah, it's very. But as usual with Rilke, it's in the smallest observations, there are just profundities. And it's like he can't help himself. It just pours out of him. You darkness that I come from.
Yeah, the heart of the poem is that second stanza. But the darkness pulls in everything. Shapes and fires, animals and myself, how easily it gathers them, powers and people. That's, I think, where the turn comes.
Yeah.
But the darkness pulls at everything.
It's a, yeah.
And we have the, it ends with those two single lines. And it's possible a great presence is moving near me. Line break, stanza break. I have faith in nights.
Right, right. Yeah, he's
for a short poem, it punches an awful lot, and it upends our simplistic light good, dark bad, you know, kind mm-hmm. of shorthand that's in so much. This is, you know, the darkness is what's being celebrated here.
I love you more than all the fires that fence in the world. That fence in the world. That our world is fenced in by fire is it's a great image right there. For it is fire that makes the circle of light for everyone, and then no one outside learns of you. That's another interesting one. You have to think about that one. I mean, powers and people. Interesting that he, that's a little bit of an unusual kind of political reference. Just plopped right into a verse that is pretty cosmic.
or spiritual.
But it conveys
powers.
It conveys the all-embracing force or power of the darkness. You know, all these powerful people too. Right. You know, so it works. I suppose in ages before, they would have just referred to the king. You know, but anyway. And, oh, by the way, I have faith in knights. Is that like is that a pun in German too? Like for knights, you know? Probably not.
I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
Okay. No, it'd be not to German.
Okay, but that might have another resonance. If I had to go back and learn a language, although I'm not going to at this point, I think I would pick German.
I would pick Spanish.
Well, it's a much more affectionate language. I mean, I believe, and it might be even more expressive. But there's a lot of you know, writers who get translated from German that I always wonder, people later always say, well, if you really knew German, they wouldn't say that, blah, 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 and whatever. So, but I think it's too late now. I don't know. I learned computer languages, okay, but, you know, I think if I had to go back to natural languages, it would be rough. Anyway. Well, I think I like our theme today, light and darkness. And I think for short poems, famous poems too, but, you know, most people, they don't have an opportunity to go back sometimes and find these gems that are there. And I think you found three beautiful ones, Jane Kenyon, Robert Frost, and Maria Rainer Rilke. I always count Rilke and Pablo Neruda as perhaps the greatest poets. And I can't speak either language, you know, so there you go. And if somebody can be so good that they work in someone else's language, I think that's kind of kind of evidence of transcendence in itself. Anyway, I got to wonder if you ask the... I should do this. I should ask the ChatGPT bot that I actually have on my computer. I should ask it to translate a Rilke poem from German and see what happens. That would be interesting. Yeah. Anyway, Janet. So, what you got going for the rest of the day? Are you headed out, or are you in for the day?
No, it's a dialysis day.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think it's been a great show, I think we should pause the podcast here. Are you good with that?
Yes, I think it's been. You know, these are three towering poets, three towering show poems.
Yep. All right. Light and dark. It's a cycle we really can't escape. Anyway. All right, everybody. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. We'll be back next Wednesday, 10 a.m. And look for the podcast on podcast.enlightenedradio.org. I've been trying to get my automation system to do more of the work, but it's been a bit of programming. So anyway, take care.